further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The Sergeant-at-Arms will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Daniel Conlin of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis. Following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us bow our heads and pray. On this St. Valentine's Day, traditionally devoted to expressions of love, we beseech the author of all love to fill our senators and their families with a profound and deep love of love, so that our senators and their loved ones may know and fully experience the peace and consolation that comes only from loving God and loving our neighbor as ourself. May their desires to love and to be loved flourish and find rich and abiding fulfillment in every aspect of their lives. We entrust this prayer and all our unspoken needs to the holy and mysterious providence of God. Amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. A lovely prayer.
Okay, bye-bye.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Champion, Clausen, Cohen, Dahl, Dames, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Eakin, Fischbach, Franzen, Gazelka, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Herr, Hayden, Hoffman, Housley, Ingebrigtsen, Jensen, Johnson, Kent, Kiffmeyer, Kunin, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Marty, Metzen, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Ortman, Osmick, Pappas, Peterson J., Peterson B., Pratt, Reinert, Rest, Rosen, Rood, Saxhog, Scalzi, Schmidt, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stumpf, Thompson, Thompsoni, Torres Ray, Weber, Westrom, Wieger, and Wickland.
A quorum is present. We move to the fifth order of business, report of committees. Fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. Second reading. Eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. Bills will be given their first reading and referred as indicated, with the exceptions of, on page one, Senate file 443 will be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. On page two, Senate file 453 will be referred to the Committee on Finance. I'm right. On finance. On page four, Senate file 469 will be referred to the Committee on Health, Human Services, and Housing. On page six, Senate file 479 will be referred to the Committee on Environment and Energy. First reading. The ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. The first three motions are author motions and will be adopted as one motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. These next motions will be individual. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to have Senate File 46 and Senate File 64 returned to the author.
And these are your bills?
Yes, Madam President.
Senate File 46 and Senate File 64, moved by Senator Goodwin, to be returned to the author. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Hayden, your mic is not on.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File 176 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Human Services, and Housing and re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
This is your bill, and you've talked to the committee chairs?
Yes, Madam President, I have.
All right. All those in favor of the Hayden motion, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, I move that Senate File 343, which is the Destination Medical Center bill, be withdrawn from the Committee on State and Local Government and re-referred to the Committee on Jobs, Agriculture, and Rural Development.
This is your bill, Senator Senjum?
Madam President, that is correct.
And this is just a different route for the bill?
Madam President, members, yes, the reason for this is that we're initially going to state and local government. We're working a little bit on an amendment to the governance structure and thought rather to delay it, to take it to jobs first, then come back to this committee.
All those in favor of the Senjum motion, say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that Senate File number 357 be withdrawn from the Committee on Health, Human Services, and Housing and be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Energy. It's my bill. Both committee chairs believe that the bill more properly begins in environment and energy.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Now, members, you can write on the upper left corner of your first yellow jacket where you want your bill to begin with. That would certainly help our staff if you gave us that indication. The next thing on the agenda are resolutions, and they'll be referred to the Rules Committee. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that House File 9, number 6 on general orders, be made a special order for immediate consideration, and I yield to Senator Sharon.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you, Madam President. I'd like to move that the amendment made to House File number 9 by the Committee on Rules and Administration in the report adopted February 13th, 2013, pursuant to Rule 45, be stricken.
Senator Sharon, do you want to explain what you're doing with this motion?
Yes. The language that we're trying to delete here is language that will create some difficulty. It was language that we had added into the bill and was not in the language of the bill of the House. So when we receive the House language, we strike the rule of the rule, the finding of the Rules Committee, we'll be eliminating a portion that we had in our bill that was an unnecessary.
Senator Sharon, you're just inserting the House language into the bill.
That's correct.
All right, thank you. All those in favor of the motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sharon. Senator Sharon on the bill.
Thank you very much, and thank you, members, for the assistance in trying to figure out what my motion was. This is the discussion of a bill that allows states to become participants in a Medicaid expansion. As you know, there were challenges to the Affordable Care Act that went in front of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court was asked to rule on a number of questions. Many of them supported the Affordable Care Act's constitutionality, but one portion of the challenge indicated that under the Affordable Care Act, the portion that required states to cover persons up to 138% of poverty was not within the power of the federal government. And so the language was changed that each state could make that decision, could opt into and accept the invitation from the federal government to participate in the early expansion, in the expansion to Medicaid up to 138% of poverty. The 138% of poverty includes a 5% asset limit set aside that allows people, anyone under the 138% of poverty, to be eligible for Medicaid. The bill expands medical assistance coverage for adults without minor children up to 138% of poverty. It's an enhanced federal match that comes with our doing this at 100%. And this enhanced match.
Members, this is a very important bill, and I would appreciate if you'd pay attention and keep the talk to a minimum or take it into the retiring room or the hallways. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam President. As I was saying, the option is with the states as to whether or not to participate in an invitation from the federal government to accept an enhanced match to support Medicaid population up to 138% of poverty. This bill says that we're saying yes in a deliberate way to the invitation from the federal government to expand medical assistance coverage for adults without minor children up to 138% of the federal poverty guideline and accept the federal match of 100%. This enhanced match will gradually be phased down until it hits 90% by the year 2020. The adults without minor children in this population are not subject to an asset test. In addition, in this bill, the bill expands coverage for parents and children ages 19 to 20 with incomes between 100% and 138% of poverty. Now, that 100% and 138% of poverty is an important number. The bill also implements the modified adjusted gross income, or what is referred to as MAGI, is a system in which you'll calculate a person's income. And by doing this, we are able to streamline the eligibility process. Under this expansion, what we would be experiencing, if we agree to this, if we say yes, is that we'll cover 87,000 more people on medical assistance as a result of the expansion. 53,000 of these 87,000 are already on Minnesota Care, our Minnesota Care program already today. And Minnesota is in a unique position because a majority of the new MA enrollees are already covered under MinCare, where the federal match was 50%. One of the benefits of the group that was on Minnesota Care being able to move into Medicaid is that the benefits under Medicaid are more generous. Under our Minnesota Care program, for example, there is a $10,000 cap or limit on hospitalization costs. As those persons move from Minnesota Care into the Medicaid program, that cap will go away. There is all sorts of benefits for that. For our partners who serve the public's health care needs in hospitals and clinics, because one of the concerns we have is the amount of uncompensated care that gets shifted onto private pay persons as a result of the limitations of our public programs or those who are underinsured or are without insurance at all. So this proposal allows us to expand who we cover, to move people from Minnesota Care, where we cover 50% of the costs, into a program that's going to cover 100% of the costs for 3 years and then gradually decline to 90%. That's a substantial benefit, economic benefit for us in the state of Minnesota and to our general fund budget. So it's important as you consider this to recognize that this is a choice that we want to make, that there are advantages to us if we say yes to this proposal. We know that when a person has health care coverage, their behavior changes, that they will be able to get and seek out preventative care instead of waiting to the point where they have to go to an emergency room. We know that Minnesotans are already paying for a majority of the population that is going to these emergency rooms without the resources to pay for their care. And it's covered either under Minnesota Care or it's taken in and shifts to other payers to cover the costs of the uncompensated care by the provider. The expansion would continue to cover those already on Minnesota Care, but it would, as I have said, give a better plan to the participants because it eliminates the premiums and the $10,000 hospital cap. No premium, no hospital cap. So if you do the math, it just makes sense. Because with the expansion, care for much of this population would be funded solely for a significant period of time and at the 90% level thereafter. Together with the early expansion that the governor ordered 2 years ago, up to 75% of poverty, this expansion will save Minnesota an estimated $1 billion, $1 billion out of our state general fund by the year 2016. The federal government has continually paid their share of health care programs, Medicare and Medicaid, and so we have a great deal of confidence that they will continue to do that into the future. But even if they don't, I'd have you consider the reality that every day that we participate in this project of the federal government will be saving the taxpayers of Minnesota a great deal of money. And we are already losing about 30 cents on every federal dollar that we send to the federal government. This way we begin to bring back to our state the dollars that our citizens are already giving to the federal government. So just to summarize and offer for discussion, we have important changes in this bill. We allow people ages 19 and 20 to be eligible as children for medical assistance. We change the eligibility determination to the MAGI. We apply asset limits only to parents and relative caregivers, and there are no asset limits for others. And we change the eligibility for most of the MA population to 138% of the federal poverty guidelines. And with that, I open it up for discussion.
Is there any discussion? Somebody raising their hand. Oh, Senator Nunau.
Thank you, Madam President. If the author is done, I do have an amendment that I would like to offer. I would like to offer the A52 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Nino moves to amend House File Number 9 as follows. Page 4 after line 24, insert, and this is the A52 amendment.
Senator Nino on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam President, and I trust members have the amendment before them on the computer. The amendment is fairly straightforward. The opt-in on this coverage for the first, I believe, 3 years, the federal government will pay for this at 100%, and then it scales down, and eventually the federal government's commitment is 90% going on into the future. There are concerns that the federal government may not be able to meet its obligations. For those of you that pay attention, the federal government now has over $16 trillion in a national debt that is increasing at the rate of roughly $1 trillion per year. Our entire economy, members, is $14 trillion. We are nationally, we are in dangerous territory and, in my opinion, high risk of the federal government having to renege on some of its obligations that it is promising to the states. So this amendment simply says if the federal government does not fulfill its obligation at that 90% funding level, that this will sunset. Now, the legislature at that point could decide and proactively opt back in. That would not be prohibited, but we would have to make that decision. We would have to choose, is it worth the cost if the federal government is, instead of paying 90%, only paying 70%, for example. Is it worth the cost to us to continue with this or not? This would force that decision at that time in the event that the federal government was not fulfilling its obligation. Members, I would support a green vote.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Sharon.
Thank you, and thank you, Senator Nunau. This concept has been presented in every committee in which this bill has passed for fairly lengthy and thorough discussion, and the amendment demonstrates that among our members there is a desire to add this language, and because it hasn't moved through the committees, there's a majority of people who do not believe this language is necessary because the option for states to be in this program is totally voluntary and in the hands of the state. It's not like other programs that have mandates associated with them, and mandates that require states to pick up the differentials if the federal government begins to withdraw its resources. The court has ruled that this is a voluntary process, and so as a voluntary process, we're able to withdraw at any time. So the question really is whether or not this body is going to be concerned about conditions and terms under which we will make decisions in the future should the federal government change its partnership with us, or if we will wait and, as we get indications from the federal government that that in fact will happen, begin to create an alternative plan. I just would add to the discussion, because I know that this is a disagreement. It's a disagreement between the members that whether or not this language is needed or not. And the Supreme Court, in its ruling, stressed that anything authorized under the tax and spending under the Affordable Care Act has to be seen as a contract, and that Congress may use its spending powers to create incentives for states to act in accordance with their federal policies. But when pressure turns into compulsion, the legislature runs contrary to our system of federalism. And the Constitution simply does not give Congress the authority to require states to regulate. A state that opts out of the ACA expansion, so what's important here is that the option to leave this expansion at some point, even if these percentages change, we stand to lose out on not just a relatively small percentage of the existing Medicaid funding, but all of it. Medicaid spending accounts for over 20% of the average state's total budget, and with federal funds covering 50 to 83% of those costs. So our partnership with the federal government continues to be very important. The vote on this amendment is about whether or not you want to write into our law some determination today, or whether or not you are willing to accept the history of the federal government in relationship to these programs, which has been that they have sustained their 50% match. They have not withdrawn that for our Medicaid program. We expect that that would continue. And should there be indications, they cannot be sudden, they cannot be fast, and we can begin to make our adjustments without writing into law the process that would hold future legislatures to a process today. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, in support of the points that Senator Sharon has made, there are a lot of areas in which we partner with the federal government. So I'm not up here to necessarily defend the federal government and sometimes their vagaries and their failure to follow through on their commitments. I'll simply point out the fact that we partner with the federal government in a wide variety of areas. Key area, of course, is transportation and highway funding. And the federal government brings in dollars, and they match our dollars to make sure that we can take care of our roads and bridges throughout the state. And members might not be aware that we have the Highway Trust Fund that has been on a slow declining arc of solvency and viability, such that no less than three times in the last few years we've had to backfill the Highway Trust Fund with general fund dollars. In 2010, $14.7 billion went in. In 2012, $2.4 billion went in. In 2013, $6.2 billion went in general fund dollars into the Highway Trust Fund, which of course is funded primarily through gas tax receipts and a few other sources. And I don't think members would support the suggestion that somehow or another we figure out how to get out of participating with the federal government on our fundamental roads and transit responsibilities. It's an important partnership. Those are important resources, and we're not programming or anticipating in our policies that somehow or another we jump out of that partnership. So, you know, if we're going to be launching policies like this for this purpose, then why wouldn't we do this in every other area of work? Workers' compensation, you name it. There's lots and lots of areas in which we partner with the federal government. It's hard to know what's going to happen in the future, but we know what's going on today. This is an important initiative, an important step to take.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senator Sharon points out that this is not necessarily a required program if the funding from the federal government discontinues, and therefore we could change it. But the fact is, we know that when people start receiving benefits from the government, they quickly become known as entitlements. And people feel they have a right to them, and they plan their lives according to having access to those programs. So it becomes extraordinarily difficult to cut back on programs that have been put in place. And yes, the federal government has kept its commitment on many programs pertaining to health care and the like, but let's take special education for an example. The fact of the matter is they haven't kept their promises there. And also, as Senator Nino correctly pointed out, we're looking at a federal government that is indebted to a level that is our annual GDP and puts the government's commitments clearly in peril as we move forward. But I think the larger question is, who should have control of our healthcare system and our decisions? Should that be the individual citizens of the state that have the ability to say, look, we're not going to participate in federal programs if the feds say they're going to do something for us and ultimately don't come through? Are we still going to be, as a practical matter, bound to those programs, or are we going to maintain control over our own Medicare, Medicaid, health care, and these kinds of things? This is one more example of handing the individual decision-making of Minnesotans over to Washington, D.C., instead of keeping them here in the state where they belong. So I strongly support Senator Nino's amendment. We're undoubtedly, I would imagine, going to vote yes today as a Senate. But the fact is, I don't know why we wouldn't protect the Minnesota taxpayer and all Minnesotans from a situation in which the Fed pulls the bait and switch and promises the money and then ultimately it doesn't come. I would ask a vote yes on Senator Nino's amendment.
Senator Hayden.
Madam President, I rise to oppose the amendment. As Senator Sharon quite eloquently talked about, we have opted in and we can opt out, and I think that that should be up to the legislature. I'll just give you an example. What if it goes down to 88%, 72%, 85%? We may still decide that that's a good deal for Minnesota as opposed to going all the way back to 50%. I think that that is the job of this legislature and the people that report to us to make the decision if whatever the level is, if that's good for Minnesota or not. And I think that we shouldn't kind of hamstrung ourselves by saying that we'll go back to the levels of 2013 if it dips right below 90%. So for that reason, along with all of the things that Senator Sharon has articulated, I think it would do well for this body to say no to this amendment.
Is there any other discussion on the amendment?
Madam President.
Senator Nino.
Madam President, I don't want to belabor the point. I just would like to request a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. A roll call will be granted. Senator Ingebrigtsen, did you still want to comment?
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Dibble yield for a question with regards to the amendment?
Senator Dibble? Senator Dibble, you've been asked to yield.
Thank you, Madam President. I yield.
Senator Dibble yields. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Just with regards to your comments, with regards to the future of the federal government and how we can guess what's going on. I think Senator Thompson touched on this, but remind me, because you've been here longer than I have, and I'm going to touch in a couple of areas that I was involved in with seatbelt law and of course the blood alcohol content being reduced to 0.08. When those laws actually were passed, or confirmation, not confirmation, but to comply with the federal law, can you tell me what was the state's, why was the state required to do that? What was the choice we were given that time as the state of Minnesota to comply with the federal government with, I think it was the seatbelt law, and I may stand corrected if it wasn't, but also the 0.08 most recently. How many dollars, or I mean, how exactly was that? And I know we were, I believe we were the 50th state to actually go with the 0.08. Could you comment on that, please?
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think you're, we got a kind of an apples and oranges comparison here. And I don't remember the exact dollars, but it was in the the tens of millions of dollars, not the hundreds of millions of dollars. What the parallel that I was drawing was, of course, how we program state dollars to match federal dollars in that very essential, largely agreed upon, crucial federal-state partnership to facilitate the kind of mobility and transportation that we all know is very, very important to the lives of our community, to our economy, to our economic competitiveness, to making sure that people have access to jobs and other opportunities. The .08 and the seatbelt, you know, that was a policy issue. Some states, most states agreed was a prudent thing to do and proceeded. Minnesota took a little bit longer. Minnesota didn't end up actually losing any dollars because of that, in any case, because we did come into compliance with that federal requirement. But really the key point is that across a lot of areas, healthcare, workers' issues, transportation, public safety, we pair up our dollars with the federal government to create a larger benefit to the public.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Dibble, for that. But that's the whole issue here is when you talk about the key point is the amendment that Senator Nienau is offering is there has been programs that basically we've been, I wouldn't say held hostage, but now that I already did say that, I'll say that, by the federal government. I mean, we just have been. And I guess if we want to go down that path of special ed funding that we were promised and now we're end up not getting those kinds of dollars, the track record is there with the federal government. Minnesotans need to, you know, basically take care of ourselves, and I would stand in favor of the amendment.
Senator Tomassoni.
Madam President, I'd like to move a call of the Senate.
Senate is under call.
Madam President.
Ask him. Senator Tomassoni, does your motion include the balance of the amendment or the balance of the bill or the balance of the day?
We'll go for the balance of the bill.
Balance of the bill. Okay.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sharon.
Thank you. On the amendment, I think it's a simple yes or no vote. It is a question of where you stand on the points that are being made this morning. Should we partner with the federal government is one of the questions that was raised. And the answer to that is either yes or no on this amendment. Are they reliable enough for us to engage in this partnership given their activities on special education? A mandate as opposed to what this proposal is, which is a voluntary participation requiring us to make agreements to participate. Three, is there enough insurance that the conditions, conditions change and the federal participation changes significantly, that we can withdraw or change our position? And those assurances are in place that because it's voluntary, that the state can change and withdraw from this contract without cause at any time. Can we cover, most now of the people who would be covered under this expansion through Minnesota Care? We only have 34,000, a significant number, but not a huge number in terms of costs when you talk about the future, as opposed to the cost of uncompensated care to the providers and to the hospitals. So we cover most of them under a program called Minnesota Care. In the Minnesota Care population, we pay 50%, and we could in the future. And you reinstate the premium process. We could reinstate the program. But this allows us to cover those same people with 100% coverage for the first 3 years at the federal level. So the question in front of you is whether or not, in this particular amendment, we need language today that articulates how we're going to deal with a feared change on the federal government's part
The answer to that is either yes or no, and I hope that the vote will be opposed.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President, Senator Sharon, members. I just walked in, but the question that I heard when I just walked in was, can we rely on the federal government to run a federal health care system? And the only thing that I keep in mind is what about Social Security? What about Medicare? What about the welfare budget of this country that has a 90% of its budget going to overhead? I think those are the questions you have to rely on, because the best indicator of the future is the past. And if the federal government messes up Social Security and the ability to retire effectively with a budget that our people can rely on, I think the answer is definitely across all party lines. That answer to that question is a definite no, they are not. Question about the Medicare system and how reliable that may be. It may be reliable, but it's in debt. So definitely the federal government is not a good handler of that as well. And we only have to raise an analytical eye to the debt ceiling of this nation to realize that the federal government is incapable of handling a budget as well. So I think the answer is relatively clear and obvious that they won't be able to handle the needs of a national health care system either.
Is there any more discussion on the amendment? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Sharon yield?
Senator Sharon, will you yield? She will yield. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm wondering, what is the harm in this amendment? I've heard the discussion from Senator Sharon and others about voting against this amendment, and I'm trying to understand what would the downside be of this amendment. This amendment simply states that if the feds fall below what they've promised, a report will be made back to the lead committees, at which point I'm sure they could determine what they wanted to do. So I'm scratching my head here trying to discern. If you look at this amendment and this amendment only, what is the harm in passing this amendment just to give some reassurance to the people of Minnesota that if the feds don't perform as they have promised, that at least the legislature will be able to revisit the issue?
Senator Sharon.
I think that is the question in front of them. I'm encouraging a no vote, that the need for the reassurance is not present, and those who feel that they need that should vote for this amendment. I think that the people that are on these programs would like to have the confidence that I have, that the federal government's history in healthcare has been strong and positive, that they haven't withdrawn their resources from us on our Medicaid program, and I expect that that will continue.
Senator Bonoff.
Madam President, I wanted to just respond also to the question that Senator Nelson has posed, because I think it's a good question. But as we look at how we have come to this point, one of the things we've done is we have moved a good number of people who were on Minnesota Care to this program. And I think it's been difficult because in order to do that, that's a change. They've had to fill out forms. They've had to be alerted to this change. And some of them, we believe, have actually not taken advantage of this opportunity because of the complexity of the change. I'm concerned that if we put this into effect, and let's say some, you know, unforeseen thing happens with the federal government that we cannot predict, and because of some unforeseen crisis that in fact that funding falls below the percentage we've identified. And yet perhaps we as a state legislature are also grappling with whatever crisis has occurred at the national level. We don't know what that would be today, but perhaps not top on our mind if we're dealing with that unforeseen crisis is the fact that this level has gone below. Now, all of a sudden, the very people who are most vulnerable and most at risk could, in fact, have their health care insurance sunset because we as a legislator haven't been able to, in a quickly responsive enough time, grappled with that change and figured out how we're going to handle it. So I think by having instead the language that is in this current bill, which says that we as a legislature do have the ability to, in fact, if that happened, we would be able to make a change, but it isn't an automatic, on autopilot, pulling the rug out from people who are counting on a particular program. Let us not forget, members, that one of the things that's best about Minnesota is that we, in fact, have always had the least uninsured and the lowest costs. And that's because we have had programs available so that it isn't just uncompensated care. The last thing we want to do is drive the uncompensated care portion of our population back into the emergency rooms. And I don't foresee that happening. But if the members insist on carrying this out to the nth degree and imagining the time where this could happen, then I would say let's make that even broader and really imagine that time and what difficulty that could present us with in this chamber.
Senator Nelson.
Well, thank you, Madam President. I would encourage the members to read the amendment. The amendment simply requires a report. That's all it is. It's a matter of information. It's a matter of giving to the legislature information in a timely manner if the feds have not fulfilled their promises. There's nothing in this amendment about yanking insurance or even making a decision. This amendment is about information, a report to the legislative.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I think it's important to be clear that the language does, and this is the issue. I don't know if anybody's going to be moved in this conversation. I think people are positioned on whether or not it is necessary to put language in this bill that says if the federal government's participation drops below 90%, then of this act, the eligibility standards for medical assistance shall revert to the standards that existed on December 31st, 2013. For this sunset to occur, the Commissioner of Human Services notifies the chairs within 10 days, and the revision to the medical assistance standards shall become effective 60 days from the date of notification. So it is a sunset, and that is what the language says. But the debate is whether or not this is necessary or not. That is what the yes vote and no vote will be on this amendment. And I'm encouraging this body to understand that this is unnecessary language. It doesn't allow us to take a look with fiscal analysis at the implications of changes in federal law. It sets it into statute when something is going to sunset. I much prefer to allow our process to go on and to allow us to do good analytics, depending on variations and changes from the federal government, in the same way that our local units of government do that when we change our position. So on the question of whether or not this amendment is needed, I would encourage the body to vote no.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I think members in this chamber have a pretty dull imagination if they can't imagine a federal government with a $16 trillion deficit not being able to fulfill the commitments that it's making in these empty promises. $16 trillion in a deficit. And the federal government is hamstrung with the sequestration bill of asking our government to cut 5%. 5%. And so I don't think that it's unreasonably for us as a state to be concerned. And I'm glad that Senator Sharon referenced the Supreme Court decision written by Chief Justice John Roberts. Whether you agree or not, he said that Congress was not regulating interstate commerce. They were taxing Americans by passing Obamacare. But he also said something very important. He put all of us in this chamber, all of us in every state legislative body on notice. And he said, beware. As soon as you opt into a federal program, you're in for the whole ball of wax. And that means the incentives, and it means the penalties to withdrawal. And I think we should all be very well advised when we say let's expand and give the federal government a whole lot more control over the decisions that we make and give up our control that people elected us to use. So I'd say beware, this is an easy amendment. This is an easy one. Just let us know if you can't fund it. We're going to have to deal with this problem. I think it's an easy no on the bill. But this amendment, pretty easy yes. So if I said that wrong, I hope everybody will vote yes. At least let's get the information that they can't fulfill the commitments, and hopefully you all just expand your imagination just a little bit.
Is there any more discussion on the amendment? Any more discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A-52 amendment. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 28 ayes and 38 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Nino.
Madam President, I would offer the A50 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Nino moved to amend House File Number 9 as follows. Page 4 after line 24, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, members. I thought the First Amendment was a good amendment, but reasonable people could disagree. Members, pay attention to this one, because this is a good amendment. This is a fiscally responsible amendment. This amendment is of a similar concept. However, the threshold is not 90%. As Senator Hayden alluded to, maybe we triggered at 88% instead of 90. And we still would save some money if that happened, if we stayed in instead of opting out. So I can see the argument for opting out on fiscal concerns. As a matter of policy, I thought it was a good amendment, but on fiscal concerns. Members, the argument for this expansion pretty much is it saves us a lot of money. Senator Sharon said, basically all these people are covered already. They're on a state plan. But we're going to get more federal money by going to the opt-in, either 100% or 90% in the out years. This amendment says that if the reimbursement for this expansion drops below the regular reimbursement rate, then we sunset. So members, if you vote against this amendment, you're saying two things. Number one, we want federal control. And number two, we want Minnesota taxpayers to pay more for it. Let me repeat that. If you vote against this amendment, you are telling your constituents that you want federal control and you want them to pay more for the privilege. This is a good amendment. This is a fiscally responsible amendment, and it's good policy. It's the whole package. Members, please vote yes, and I would request a roll call, Madam Chair.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Sharon.
Thank you, and I appreciate that the persistence
of Senator Nenow. I would encourage a no vote on this amendment, and although he has tried to identify the reasons why I would vote no, I would encourage you to erase those in my column. Those are not the reasons that I would vote no. I would vote no because I don't want today to make decisions about what it is we want to do as the conditions change with the federal government. I'm not certain, for example, at that time that it won't be a good idea for us to invest in these programs for people up to 138 of poverty. I don't know that today. I don't know what our economic conditions will be today. There's just too many variables that are unknown, including not knowing what the federal government is going to be doing. I acknowledge that. We can't have absolute confidence about that. But I have confidence that we as a body are capable of understanding as situations change. We certainly have done that with all the deficits we've been dealing with as our economy slipped. We have to make decisions. We have to make modifications and establish new priorities. But we don't need to do that today in this bill. And that's the debate, is whether or not we need this language in the bill today or not. And that's all a no vote means.
Is there any more discussion on the A50 amendment? Senator Nenow.
Madam President, I just would remind members of the comments made by Senator Thompson earlier that if you have full trust in the federal government fulfilling their obligations, just look to special education. For those that don't serve on Health and Human Services, you might not be aware, but currently our normal reimbursement is 50-50. The state pays a dollar and the feds pay a dollar. So the federal government is paying half. For special education, the federal government was going to pay about 40%. That was their promise. They have never paid half of that. They have never paid half. So if you think that this is a unreality, if this is just crazy thinking, look at special ed, because that is reality. That's what's happening today. The federal government is not living up to even half of its obligation. And that's what this amendment says, is the federal government needs to meet its obligation of paying half. And if they don't, it's going to cost, by staying into this program, if they drop below that normal 50-50 reimbursement, that means your constituents will pick up the difference and pay more for the privilege of taking on all the federal requirements that come with this expansion. So this is a good amendment. Please vote yes.
Senator Marty.
Madam President, Senator Nino's point would be true if changing the standard so people get less care meant they didn't need any care anymore. They do still need care. You take people off medical assistance and they do get care, but we pay for it. Regions and Hennepin County Medical Center and a whole bunch of other hospitals around the state pay for it because people use the emergency rooms and they use the inpatient care. People don't stop getting sick when you take away their health care. If the federal government's going to pay 90%, that's pretty incredible. If they did, because of budget reasons, cut it to 75 or whatever percent, you know, they're still paying 3/4 of the bill instead of us paying 100%. We actually be paying more than 100% because when you don't take care of people up front, it's more expensive. You can pretend we're not paying those bills, but when people get sick, they go to the hospital, they go to the emergency room, we all pay for them. If the feds are paying even 10%, that's more than we're getting now.
Is there any more discussion on the A50 amendment? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. This is not a committee I serve on, and I want to know if Senator Nenow will yield.
Senator Nenow, will you yield? He will yield. Senator Gazelka.
Senator Nenow, right now the feds pay 50% or going to 90%. If they reneged and we were back at 50%, do you know what the number is that we would be obligated to pay that we do not, would not, or prior to now would not be paying? I know that doesn't make sense. You know what I'm trying to get at?
Yes, I believe I do, Madam President.
Senator Nenow.
Madam President, actually we start out at 100%, and then in the out years it will drop down to 90%. So to keep my math simple, I'm going to go with the 100%. So if the feds, if this amendment were to be adopted, and the feds reduce their reimbursement to the point where this was triggered, from the 100%, this would get triggered at less than 50%. Over the next 4 years, it's about $1.1 billion that the feds are going to be putting into this. So if you divide that in half, if we have to make up half of that, because the feds are getting down below the 50-50 split that's normal, that means Minnesota taxpayers will pay over the next 4 years $500 million more in taxes for the privilege of taking on the federal requirements if this amendment does not pass.
Senator Hayden.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm trying to follow this discussion. I do sit on the Health and Human Service Committee, and so what I'm trying to figure out is that if I hear Senator Sharon explain the bill, we have the ability to make a decision to opt out at any time. We have the ability to take a look at what our federal reimbursement is if for some reason it drops below 50% or below 90%, and we get to make a decision. With that decision, we would then have to figure out what do we do, as Senator Marty talked about, with those that are affected. We'd have to figure out if we'd have to start a new program, if they would just go uninsured, if our charity hospitals would have to pick up the cost. We would have to figure that out because people would still get sick. So I'm not sure that I follow Senator Nenow's saying that it is a mandate that we would have to take care of those people from the federal government. I think it would be, it's a moral mandate, right, that we take care of those that are sick. So my problem that I have with however many amendments that Senator Nenow would want to craft on this issue is that we already have the obligation to take care of those that are sick in our state. And today we are looking to expand that to 138%. We are looking to take advantage of 100% coverage for 3 years from the federal government and then down to 90%. Future legislatures, based on what happens to the federal government, will have to continue to make that decision as to where that works. There isn't something that prevents us from doing that in the future. So I suspect that part of this process is just having a good debate about the federal government and if they can meet their obligations or not. I can appreciate that. I think that that's a healthy debate, but I don't think it's really relevant to what we're doing today because we already have an opportunity to monitor and take a look at what the federal government is reimbursing us, and if it gets to a point where it does not work for us, we have to make decisions accordingly. So with that, I continue to support Senator Sharon to say that we should vote no on the amendment and that it is unnecessary because we already have those powers. Thank you, Madam President.
Is there any more discussion on the amendment? Any more discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A50 amendment. All senators having voted, the Secretary will close the roll. There being 28 in favor, 38 opposed, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? Senator Benson.
Thank you. I have the A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Benson moves to amend House File Number 9 as follows. Page 4, after line 24, insert, And this is the A51 amendment.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. What if all the federal money goes away? Are you willing to acknowledge that we need to just start over and make a different plan? We're going to revert with this amendment. If all the federal money goes away, we'll revert to the standards that are currently in place, and this body, our Health and Human Services Committees, will go forward with a plan of our own, not dictated by the federal government, but using our innovation and our creativity. It means we will say to the policymakers that help us, we are starting over. We will fund this our way with our tax dollars, and we will do the right things by Minnesotans, not just because the federal government says so, but because we are responsible for the citizens of this state. And so I ask for a yes vote that if all federal funding goes away, we will sunset this provision, revert to current standards, and make our own plan.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I just am repeating my point to the body on all of these sunset amendments, and that is that we can do this without this amendment.
Any other discussion on the amendment? Senator Betson.
And Madam President, I'm going to request a roll call. And Senator Sharon, I do respect that we can already do this in federal law, except that once we put something in place operationally in this state, it tends to live and grow of its own means. And when the federal dollars creep away, state dollars creep in. And so since we cannot amend based on a reduction from 90%, and we cannot amend based on a reduction to current standards, can we at least have a policy in place that says we are not going to allow this to creep and grow if all the federal dollars go away? And so, members, I'm asking for a yes vote on this amendment. Thank you.
Roll call has been requested. A roll call granted. Senator Ortman.
Madam President, a question for Senator Sharon.
Will Senator Sharon yield? Senator Sharon will yield. Senator Ortman.
Madam President and Senator Sharon, if we withdraw at some point from this program, there may be penalties that we would have to pay. Isn't that correct?
Senator Sharon.
If we withdraw, if we do not participate in this program or withdraw from this program, I guess that'd be the same. The consequence of that is that we would lose the enhanced federal funding.
Senator Nino.
Madam President, that's the point of this amendment. If there is no federal funding, there is no enhanced federal funding. This amendment says if all the money goes away, and just based on the fiscal note that was done on this bill, looking at the next 4 years, those are the only numbers we have to work with, that's $1.163 billion. $1.163 million that we would say Minnesotans will now pay out of their pocket for the privilege of taking on the federal mandates. That just doesn't make sense. If we're getting into this because there's federal money and it saves the state money, then it would make sense that we would at least put into statute that we're going to get out of it if there is no federal money and it's costing the state money. It's the backside of the same coin. I've heard the argument against it. I just don't understand it. So, members, please, please, this is a good amendment.
Senator Hayden.
Madam President, and as I listen to Senator Nina, I guess I'm confused as well. It's kind of like deja vu all over again. We're kind of having the same argument over and over. What I continue to hear Senator Sharon say is that if the federal money starts to go away, this legislature, or future legislatures, has an opportunity to take a look at that and to pull back and to say we're no longer going to pay. I don't know where the mandate is. And I do say that honestly, there, unlike other programs in which we are mandated, we're mandated to wear seat belts and we're mandated to provide special education funding regardless to if the federal government comes through. We're not mandated in which to do this. Now, what we do have to do is figure out, and I think maybe this gets to the crux of it, and I really am trying to understand this. What it does say is those that were receiving health insurance up to 138%, we no longer are getting the federal match. Now what do we do with those people? And we have to figure that out anyway. So what happens? Do we create a new Minnesota Care? Do we do nothing and we let the hospitals and we let them get sick and they go in emergency room as their primary care? And we figure it out that way and the property tax holders have to pick it up, our insurance rates go up. That's all what happens today. So in this particular case, I still can't figure out why we need something that says that we need to sunset a program if the feds don't match, because we already have the ability to take a look at that, pull back, change our programs, figure out if there's another way in which to get people who need health insurance that can't afford it, the way in which we do it. That is what we do today. Once again, it seems to me that this argument is not really based on this, but this argument is based on if we should do this or not. And I think that we're going to have an opportunity to vote on that soon, but I just don't see where these sunset provisions, no matter how you craft them over and over and over, are necessary, because we already have that ability. And what I'd like for us to do is to allow those members who will be here if the in the event that the federal government goes belly up, I'd like for us to be able to take a look at that, make a really thoughtful decision in real time, in that context, and be able to make a good decision for Minnesota and not necessarily make that one today based on hypothetical situations.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. There's nothing in this amendment that says we need to send people to hospitals for care. There's nothing in this amendment that says we're raising property taxes. There's nothing in this amendment that binds a future legislature. All it does is say, if there's a policy in place that the feds say they're going to fund, then they can fund it. But when they don't, the policy goes away and we take back control. Once something is in place in this government, it grows. Even if the federal dollars go away, it continues to grow. The federal government is dictating far too much of what we do in this body. And it is time for us to stand up and say, we are the legislature for the state of Minnesota, and we will make decisions that are our purview and do what's best for Minnesota.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam President. Again, I'm going to go back to an old theme here. Fairness, fairness, fairness. And protection. A lot of talk here about protecting those who don't get care, being fair to those who need care. Well, what we're trying to do here with these amendments is protect Minnesotans and protect Minnesota health care. What the federal government is doing and what our colleagues are suggesting is that we continue to follow this trail of breadcrumbs until we get to the edge of the cliff and fall over. We continue to go down this road even though the federal Medicare Medicaid system is going broke and is failing our citizens now. There are numerous clinics and hospitals will not take those payments because they cannot afford it. That means people are not getting care. So instead of finding a way to do this better and more productively, protect our citizens, protect our health care, and do it fairly so everybody will be protected, we will continue to follow this trail of crumbs until we fall over the cliff. And I think that is irresponsible. It's the wrong way for Minnesotans, the wrong way for us to represent our citizens and our constituents to protect Minnesotans and their health care. Because in the end, this is not going to protect anybody or give them better care. So I say vote for the amendment. Thank you.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I respect all of the disagreement that there is in the chamber about things. There are two, to me, there are at least two separate questions. One is whether or not this amendment that's in front of you is needed to protect the public from anything. And what I've repeatedly said is that we have the capacity to provide those protections without this amendment. So the need to protect the public is already in our hands without this amendment. It's an unnecessary amendment. And the second, discussions that have also infiltrated the amendment process is the discussion about the bill in general, which is whether or not members of this body want to participate in a partnership with the federal government at all. And there may be reasons why members of the government would be afraid to do that.
because they're fearful of the government's withdrawal of resources, or they're fearful of the strings that go along with that, or they are opposed to federal government's intrusiveness into states' activities. Those might be reasons that members of this body vote against this bill. But this amendment is not related to that at this time. We will discuss that under the bill in general. But this is about whether or not this is protection language needed, and I'm encouraging the body to vote no.
Is there any more discussion? Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Sharon yield?
Senator Sharon, will you yield? Yes, Senator Sharon yield. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Sharon, I've been listening to this debate go on for some time now, and I am truly struggling with why the opposition to the idea of the state of Minnesota protecting itself if the federal government does not come through with the money that they have promised. I'm truly struggling with that. Is there any amendment, Senator Sharon, that you would accept which would protect the state of Minnesota if the federal government does not fulfill its promise to us, so that the state of Minnesota would be in a position to protect itself?
Senator Sharon.
I think the question, in essence, is would I accept any amendment that relates to the protection of the people should the federal government withdraw its support? And if I've got the essence of your question, my response would be that the ability to protect the public is already in our hands. The amendment is not needed in order for us to accomplish that objective. Unlike the mandates that the federal government has given us in terms of early childhood, this is voluntary. What I don't like about language in the bill is that it prescribes what we are going to do and takes away from us and from future legislatures the ability to do an analysis and to make decisions based on information and variables that present themselves at that time. That's my position. I don't think it's necessary. I support and share the concern that we are all talking about here, which is our role in protecting the public. What we disagree about is whether or not this amendment is necessary to achieve that. I'm saying it is not necessary. There are others who feel that it is, and I think that this body allows you to have an opportunity to vote on that.
Is there any other discussion? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A51 amendment. All senators having voted, All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 27 in favor, 38 opposed, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other amendments? The secretary will give Senate file, House file 9, its third reading.
House file number 9, a bill for an act relating to human services, expanding medical assistance eligibility, requiring the use of modified adjusted gross income and a standard income disregard.
Is there any other discussion? Yes, Senator Hahn.
Thank you. Members, we've had a debate on this bill, and I think this is an easy bill for us to think about, an easy bill for us to vote against. We've had an opportunity to have some discussion on this. We've had an opportunity to vote on three amendments that we have offered to the majority. We've suggested that there are some issues with the funding of this that we are concerned about. The federal government has said that they are going to pay a large portion of the funding for the expansion of Medicaid. And there are some of us who are not in a trusting mood. We are not quite sure that we can trust the assurances of the federal government that they are going to be able to finance this indefinitely into the future. And so we say, well, let's put some language into the bill. Let's require that the federal government do that, and if they don't, then let's put language in the bill that makes it clear that if they fail to live up to that commitment, that the people of Minnesota will be protected. Now, the majority is saying, well, we don't need to do that. There are already assurances. We don't need that. Well, we all know, those of us who have been here a few years, that it's not unusual in a legislative body, in a legislative endeavor, to have what's called comfort language offered in bills, where there are sometimes issues that people are concerned about, and they say, well, we can put some language in here just to offer assurances to you that what you're concerned about is not something you need be concerned about. And so as I listened to this debate on the sunset provisions that were offered, I thought, well, why wouldn't the majority look at this as, well, if they're not necessary, why wouldn't we just accept them anyway? If it's just unnecessary, then just take them. It's just comfort language for the minority. Let them have that amendment. Maybe they'll be satisfied with that. Maybe that'll encourage them to be more willing to accept this as something that they need not be concerned about. But the fact that there's been such determined resistance to that, in my mind, just increases the concern. It increases the concern that perhaps there ought to be more concern to this than what the majority claims there isn't. So again, I think the point that was made is that can we trust the federal government to live up to its commitment? I think clearly the point has been made. We shouldn't. We can't. The question I would have, members, for this is where is this money coming from? Senator Ortman made an allusion to this. We have a federal government that is, what, $16 trillion in debt. Where is the money coming from to fund this Medicaid expansion? Is there some pile of money in Washington, D.C. that is uncommitted, that is sitting there waiting to be used? We know that's not true. We know that the money that is going to be spent to fund this program is probably going to be borrowed from somebody, maybe the Chinese government. I don't know. But it is not money that is readily available. It is not cash sitting in some account waiting to be spent. The federal government is overspending its budget to a degree that is almost unimaginable. They don't have the same kind of provisions we have in this state that requires a balanced budget. So they can do that. They can truly run deficits, and they do, and they have the biggest deficits in the history of the country under this president. And they are spending money that they don't have. They are impoverishing our children and grandchildren. And so we are saying, let's do that. Let's help them do that. Let's take money that we don't have and let's spend that money. Let's do that. Let's help them do that. Let's help the federal government in their bad behavior. Let's take their money and help them do that. The second question I think we should be asking ourselves is who makes the decisions about health care? Who ought to make decisions about health care? And we did have a debate about this nationally with the federal health care law. And many of us, despite what the federal court decision was, still believe that the primary decision makers on health care ought to be states and state legislatures, this body. And one thing that I learned in the last 2 years of serving as the chairman of the Health and Human Services Committee is that there is, if there's any part of the state budget that has a lot of federal involvement in it, it is the Health and Human Services budget. And when we went through in the last couple of years the exercise of trying to manage that budget within the constraints of the resources we had, and we would meet with the department, and we'd meet with different stakeholders, and we would talk about, well, what can we do? Where can we do this? How can we manage this budget? And someone would say, well, here's an idea. Let's try this. And the department would say, well, we can't do that. The federal Medicaid laws don't permit that. We could maybe seek a waiver that might take 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or who knows how many years. We could apply for that. But even if we did, we can't count that as a savings to our budget because that only counts if you get that waiver, and we don't know if that's ever going to happen. So it might be a good idea. It might be something that we could think about, but you can't use that as any way to really balance your budget. And I can't tell you how many conversations we had like that. And it wasn't just Republicans asking those questions. It was Democrats asking those questions as well. And so there was a significant portion of this part of the budget, which is about over a third of the state general fund, a significant portion of that budget that was essentially off limits, tied up in federal risk constraints, federal rules, federal laws, federal regulations, because it was Medicaid dollars. So now what we're saying is, let's do more of that. Let's put even more of that budget, more of our budget that we are elected to manage, let's put more of that budget into the hands of rules and regulations that we are not going to be able to manage. That sounds like a great idea. So the next time that we have issues with managing our state budget, there will be even more of it that will be beyond our control to deal with. And members, I question whether that is a smart thing to do. Because if there's one thing we've learned in the last several years is that we know that we are facing situations where the economics of the state are going to fluctuate, that we're going to have to deal with situations that we can't always anticipate. And what we need more than anything is flexibility. And what we need to have is the ability to manage our laws, to manage our programs. And if we tie ourselves up by committing to do things that the federal government tells us to do, and the only way to seek relief is to go to them and beg them to give us relief and allow us to change their rules, and they say, well, we'll get back to you 3 or 4 years down the road, that doesn't help us. And yet that's what we're going to do here. So I think there's some pretty fundamental questions tied up with this issue of expanding Medicaid. And I would just urge members to consider this. This is not just a question of money and a question of budgets. It's also a question of broader implications, a question of what our duty is to represent the people of this state, and are we doing our duty when we turn that over, in this case, to the federal government? And I know that the governor, in his discussions about his budget that he has just proposed, and the majority has talked a lot about this, that they say they want a budget that doesn't have gimmicks in it, a no-gimmick budget, without shifts, without, you know, gimmicks, without, they want a straightforward budget. Well, let me tell you, this is the biggest gimmick in the world. We're going to shift a huge portion of our budget over to the federal government, asking them to pay for things with money they don't have, asking them to assume responsibility for things that should be ours, asking them to write rules and regulations on how we're going to manage the concerns of our people in ways that we can't control. A huge gimmick, a huge shifting of responsibility away from our duties as legislators in this body, things that we were elected to do. I think this is completely contrary to the promises and the commitments that the majority and the governor have made to say that they're going to have a budget that doesn't shift, doesn't gimmick their way into solving our problems as a state. We have taken pride, and I think justifiably so, and many members in this floor have talked about the fact that we have tried to do the right things by the people of this state, to provide health care in ways that make sense. And a point has been made. We do not turn people away from health care in this state. And we have developed programs. And yes, sometimes they have been costly, but we have tried to find ways to reduce those costs, to make them better, to find ways to find solutions that are right for Minnesota, that can fit within the constraints of what our taxpayers can afford. And what we're going to do here now is shift all that effort, all that work, and take it out of the hands of this body and put it over into a broken federal Medicaid program that people know needs reform. If there's one thing that we know is that the federal Medicaid program is broken and it needs reform, and the last thing we should do is agree to expand it before it's fixed. And so, members, I would urge you, let's not go down this path. We do not need to do that. To the extent that we need to find better ways to care for the health care of the people of this state, let's agree to do that. Let's work together to do that here in this body with Minnesota laws, with Minnesota programs, with Minnesota legislators working together. Let's not put ourselves into servitude to federal laws, federal rules, federal regulations that we are not going to be able to change if they don't work. Let's agree to work together to solve our problems here. And so, members, I would urge you to vote no on this bill.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Thank you very much for those perspectives, Senator. I think that they do articulate disagreements that we have in the Senate. So the first issue that was raised was why not accept comfort language. And I can understand the perspective that it would provide comfort. But the language also had another component to it that made it difficult for me to accept, and that is that those sunset provisions, all of them tied us to an action without data. And if you are data-driven, instead of making assumptions today and projections about what might happen in the future on basis of a fear about what might happen, rather than wanting to make decisions on real facts and real data in time, then you ask for comfort language. But I'm not supporting comfort language that ties us to creating comfort over using data in order to make decisions in the future based on variables. I think that that's not responsible. Another issue of concern that I respect but disagree with is whether or not we should participate in helping the federal government's bad behavior in terms of their spending. What I think that the body needs to consider is that we do pay federal tax dollars, and that we draw back probably 30 cents less on every dollar that we send out there. What this opportunity is for the state of Minnesota is for us, on behalf of the citizens of the state, to draw back federal dollars that we've sent but have not had returned dollar for dollar. Another issue is the restrictions under Medicaid, or restrictions in general from the federal government when we accept resources from them. And highlighted reality that when we accept those restrictions, it does create difficulty for us to have flexibility when we're looking at reforms in the state, and that we have to pursue often a waiver in order to accomplish that. But the conclusion that you come to, if you want to have all the flexibility, is that we have to withdraw or eliminate our relationship now from the federal government. Or our option is to evaluate each time there is an offer from the federal government and check the reality each time based on data whether or not that makes sense for the state of Minnesota. Especially when the offer is voluntary, which it is in the Medicaid expansion. I think it's important for us to understand that those who would vote against this bill on the basis that are presented were presented, I honor that and I respect that. I simply disagree with that, that is enough of a basis for us to vote against an opportunity for the state of Minnesota to bring $1 billion by 2016 into the state that we would otherwise have to pay either out of our own general fund or an increased premium cost, because there will be uncompensated care for the care of a group of people that we're already caring for, simply in a very untransparent way. And to remember that a no vote on this bill gives us things. What it gives us is the loss of that $1 billion. We lose a method of covering the people up to 100% of poverty, because there's nothing under the Affordable Care Act in the exchange that provides for people who are below 100% of poverty. They simply would be left out in the cold.
A no vote would give us a loss of the federal share that we now receive for our earlier expansion. We keep that benefit with a yes vote. A no vote also causes us to lose the opportunity to give relief to our state's budget at a time when we're dealing with deficits. And we're giving some relief, as I've said, to our hospitals because the Medicaid population will not have a cap on their hospitalization costs. And those hospitals won't have to transfer or shift those costs in a less than transparent way on the insurance purchasing or on the individual pay. We lose the opportunity to allow our lowest income families to have access to a comprehensive health care, to be able to have access to preventive programs that keep them away from more expensive costs that we cannot afford to pay. And we lose our chance. We lose the chance of the federal dollars that we already pay to the federal government. This is money that's already going there, and it gives us the opportunity to draw it back into the state. We are also, if we're voting no, helping those who would prefer to stay away from any involvement in federal activity. We would be helping the perspective that that relationship with the federal government is a negative relationship and that they should stay out of the state's business. And not everybody in this body agrees with that perspective. So I'm encouraging a yes vote on this bill.
There being no further discussion, the secretary will take the roll on House File 9. All senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 45 ayes, 22 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is adopted and is title agreed to.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. I move that House File number 6 be taken from the table.
On that motion, all in favor, please say aye. Senator Bach.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that House File number 6 be made a special order for immediate consideration, and I yield to Senator Scoy.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President and members, and thanks to Senator Bach for catching House File number 6 at the desk. Members, this is the conformity bill, the federal tax conformity bill. The federal government, at the end of the year, as part of the negotiations to avoid the fiscal cliff, did a number of tax changes, some permanent and some temporary, that we are conforming with some of them for the year 2012. And the reason that it was important to catch this at the desk is because this tax conformity has a very much a timeliness issue. And Minnesotans are currently filing tax returns. And if we are able to act quickly on this, Minnesotans will not have to file amended returns, hopefully. And so with that in mind, I would like to walk through briefly what the conformity issues that are addressed here and what the cost is. And I believe handed out on your desk is a spreadsheet of information on what House File 6 is. I see it's being passed out right now. It does include provisions dealing with teacher expenses, education credit. It does have provisions dealing with automatic inflation for adjust AMT. There are provisions dealing with mortgage insurance deductions. There is a qualified tuition expense deduction. The House passed an amendment in their bill that we are including in ours dealing with Northwest Airlines employees, as they were airline was purchased by Delta, so that they're not having their IRAs taxed twice. There are provisions in here extending authority for people over 70 and a half to make contributions to qualified charities up to $100,000 from their IRA, and a number of other relatively technical provisions that deal with the timing of taxes and taxes paid. Now, I did mention the importance of doing these actions timely. And as many of you know, in the Senate Reform Division and now in the Senate Tax Committee today, we have been having an extended discussion about whether we would be able to include in this bill some of the vetoed tax provisions from last year. These are a number of important member provisions that we thought this would be a good opportunity to bring off to conference committee and hopefully get the House to accept these efforts. As I've looked at the timeliness of this and the schedule that we're operating under, I had extensive conversation with Commissioner Franz last night. It's become apparent that we're not going to be able to move forward on these member provisions. The House just will not accept them, and they do not have a timeliness issue. So as we've been moving this bill through the Reform Division and the committee, we were amending those provisions on, but I'm not going to offer that amendment on the floor of the Senate today. I do not want to be holding up this tax conformity bill. I do have an amendment that I do want to offer, though, and so, Madam President, if I could offer the A5 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Skoy moves to amend House File Number 6 as follows, page 1, after line 7, insert, and this is the A5 amendment.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President.
Madam President. Forgive me, Senator Skoy, but a point of order.
For what purpose does the senator rise?
Madam President, the A5 amendment that's been proposed is not germane under Minnesota rule under our rules. 35.2, a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different subject or is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill to which it is proposed. And Madam President, I would bring to your attention the A13 that was adopted this morning is included in the A5 that would change the membership of the IRRB. There are no tax provisions in that portion of this amendment, and it is out of order as not germane on both counts under Rule 35.2.
Advice to the President. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator Artman and Madam President. The Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board is all contained within the tax portions of Minnesota statutes. That's the reason that it's being handled here. And I would argue that as long as it's in the same tax provisions, that it would be considered germane.
Further advice to the President. Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. I would call your attention to a previous ruling in this body on germaneness. And I spoke to that ruling. The ruling that an amendment was non-germane was based on the title of the bill. Now, I spoke up and cited precedents from my previous term where the title of the bill was not considered as part of the germaneness ruling. However, the President did not find that well taken. The President referred to the title and said that was what this germaneness ruling was going to be based on. Given that precedent in this session, just this month, I will then bring your attention to the titles of the bills. The bill that's being amended is relating to economic development regulating the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board. I'm reading right off of the title. The bill unto which we are amending it is relating to taxation, conforming certain income franchise and property tax refund provisions. Madam President, there's no relation between those two.
Further advice to the President.
Madam President.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, members, for those of you that aren't familiar with this Economic Development Board, it does receive its revenues through the production tax. And so all of these articles are in the tax portion of our statutes. And therefore, this is the appropriate mechanism to use to make these adjustments to the board in order for this board to form itself.
Advice. Senator Ortman.
Madam President, the provisions we're talking about relating to the IRRB were never referred by the President or her office to the Tax Committee, and yet they're on general orders. The President sent the bill to Senator Tomasoni's Economic Development Committee, never went to taxes, passed all the way up to the general orders. That decision's already been made. It's not even within the jurisdiction of the Tax Committee.
Madam President?
Is there further advice? Senator Nenow.
Thank you, Madam President. And on that line, I would refer you to, if you want to pull it up, Senate File 252, the history of the bill. It was introduced, referred to Jobs and Ag and to Commerce, and it was brought to the floor for second reading. And I would suggest to the President that in order for a properly functioning body, we must have consistency. We cannot base our rulings on one thing one day and base our rulings on one thing another day. If we have inconsistency in our procedures and our policies and the way we handle bills and amendments, then this body is going to fall apart. And I would implore the President to look to the current precedent made during this session.
Is there further advice to the President? Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President.
Madam President, it's clearly germane to a tax bill because that's the statute that the Iron Range Resource and Rehabilitation Board is in. The argument that it came out of the Jobs Committee without being referred to taxes is irrelevant because that was a policy committee, and that's where it was appropriate to make the change because that's the jurisdiction of the policy of that. But this is not only policy. This particular bill also refers to the makeup of the committee that then has every ability to deal with the tax monies that are in the IRRB, and it's, if you want to use the word conformity, it's conforming to the fact that the board needs to be changed because it's impossible to adhere to current law, and this fits perfectly in this bill.
Further advice, Senator Ortman.
Madam President, the underlying House file relates to the federal tax liability of Minnesotans. And the amendment that we're talking about attempts to accomplish a substantially different purpose, to change the makeup and the jurisdiction or organization of the IRRRB. It does not impact their tax raising authority, and it would not adjust or impact the federal tax liability of Minnesotans. It is intended to accomplish a different purpose.
Further advice, and then I'm going to rule. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And Madam President, as you know, just because a committee administrator, a bill author, had a bill referred to general orders does not mean it doesn't have tax implications. Our staff is continually looking at the bills introduced and moving through the legislature, and if they do have tax implications, they will be requested that they come to the tax committee.
Having reviewed the amendment.
Well, Madam President, further advice.
Senator Nenow.
Madam President, based on what Senator Scoy just said, he argued against germaneness. This bill was not called into the tax committee.
Having reviewed the amendment and considered the point of order and the advice to the President, point of order is not well taken. Further discussion on the A5 amendment. Senator Scoy.
Well, thank you, Madam President. And I would like to walk through the two provisions that are in this amendment. These are both issues that have timeliness issues. And so we think it's important that they move with regard to this bill in order that they get accomplished in a timely manner. The first one is regarding the tax incidence study. We heard in the Tax Committee this morning from the Department of Revenue that they think that Minnesota's tax incidence study, that is an assessment of Minnesota and local taxes paid, should not include as a part of its base the federal income tax. And so we are removing that. We think it's muddling the waters, as their word. And so that is being changed in this amendment. And the second part of the amendment, we just had some discussion over whether it was germane or not, was brought to us by Commissioner Sertich to Senator Tomasoni. There was a bill heard and introduced, and that is an effort to make sure that that board can convene. After redistricting, there were changes that have caused it to not have membership so that they can convene, and I think Senator Tomasoni is going to discuss that if there are more questions.
Senator Scoy, for the information of the body, the reference you made to the tax incidence study, would you point out where that is in this amendment?
Thank you, Madam President. That's on page 1. It's in section 2, biennial report. And then the balance of the amendment deals with the Iron Range Economic Development Board.
Further discussion of the A5 amendment. Senator Limmer.
Madam President, for the duration of this bill discussion, I would impose a call of the Senate.
Senate is under call.
Madam President. Thank you, Madam President. I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and that absent members, or that Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in absent members.
On that motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. The Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Discussion on the A5 amendment. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Scoy yield?
Senator Scoia will hear him.
Madam President, in the subcommittee for tax reform, we heard from CPAs talking about this present tax season, being able to help Minnesotans file their tax returns right now, that they still yet don't have clear direction from us on what they're supposed to do. And even though this may be germane, I don't know that it's the appropriate vehicle to do this. It's my understanding that the House language, if we accepted it as is, we would avoid having to go to conference committee and delay the process even further. And so my question for Senator Scoia is would there not be a better vehicle to do some of these other things so that we can speed up the process so that Minnesotans can pay their or do their taxes?
Senator Scoia, response to the question.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka, and you're absolutely right about the timeliness of this, and hence that's why I didn't offer the amendment that had all those other provisions in it, because I understood that the House just was not going to go there this early in the session, and I fully expect that we will all get a chance to revisit those issues. These are issues that have timeliness to them that need to be occurring now. I have understanding that the House did put an amendment on their bill, so they do not just have per se the original conformity bill that they started with, and I'm optimistic that the House would be willing to accept these amendments. They are meeting later on this afternoon. If we pass this slimmed down, streamlined conformity bill, they would have the option to accept this amendment, this one amendment that we're offering, and then the governor could even sign it today or tomorrow.
Further discussion of the A5 amendment. Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I would like to offer an amendment to delete the changes to the tax incidence study. I believe it's the A10 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment to the amendment. Senator Ortman.
Senator Ortman moved to amend the Scoia Amendment to House File Number 6 as follows. Page 1, delete Section 2.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. We had a very spirited conversation about this in the Tax Committee this morning. In 2011, the legislature passed a provision changing our tax incident study, because when the Department of Revenue was studying the tax impact on Minnesotans of their income taxes, the Department of Revenue was not factoring in the federal tax burden of Minnesotans. And so we want as much information as possible when we start comparing and talking about whether or not our income tax is progressive or regressive. You want to add in that portion of the federal tax income, because when people look at their burden, they want to know the entire tax burden, not just the state income tax burden. And so, Madam President, the legislature, in its wisdom, passed a bill in 2011 directing our Department of Revenue to include the information from the federal taxation of Minnesotans into the tax incident report. And we appropriated $15,000 when we passed that bill, and the governor signed it. And the taxpayers of Minnesota paid that $15,000 to get the information about their federal tax burden. It is current law, and the Department of Revenue has a current law obligation to prepare that report with the federal income tax liability factored in. And guess when that report is due? Members, it's due in 2 weeks, on March 1st. And now that the report is due, the Department of Revenue and the governor don't want to give us the information. So all of a sudden there's an amendment in the Tax Committee this morning to change the current law so you don't have to give us the report on March 1. Why do you think that is? They don't want us to know the truth, that Minnesota's income tax system is already very progressive. And it will be embarrassing when they propose income tax increases on Minnesotans, because there's already tax fairness. There's more than tax fairness in our income tax system in the state of Minnesota. But they're going to hide the truth from us. They don't want to give us the report. They don't want Minnesotans to know the truth. And so buried in the activities today is a change in the current law so that we can't get that report on March 1st. I think that's shocking. I think people here in the state Senate have a much higher responsibility than to pull this report and bury it. And so I hope all of us will feel a sense of responsibility to the current law that we get that report on March 1st. I'm sorry if it changes somebody's talking points. I'm really sorry if the Department of Revenue has to change their PowerPoint. But I think it's really important that we have the facts and we have an intellectually honest discussion about what the tax burden is for Minnesotans before we engage in a big discussion about whether there's tax fairness in the state of Minnesota. And I urge every member in this body, if you have an ounce of intellectual honesty, you vote for this amendment to give us that report.
I'm going to remind the members that comments during their speeches are to be directed to the president, and they are to face the front of the chamber. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And yes, Senator Artman, we did have a vigorous discussion about this issue in tax committee, and the Deputy Commissioner Von Mosch is going to verify, but I do believe that this is footnoted in the tax incident study. But the importance of the Minnesota tax incident study is so that we can analyze the impact on tax policy that we control and that our local governments control, not policies that are outside of our control. And so it's important that we have this tax incident study dealing with Minnesota state and local taxes. I ask for you to, I don't know where we are in the process. Are we just on my amendment, or did Senator Ortman have an amendment to the amendment?
For the information of the body, we are on the A-10 Ortman amendment to the amendment. Senator Osmet.
Madam President, may I just ask for a roll call?
A roll call has been requested. Senator Osmet. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I wonder, Madam President and members, if everyone in here knows what the federal income tax rates are. If they know what they are, do they know that the bottom one is 10% under $8,700? Do they know that if you make more than $178,000 to $389,000 that you're paying 33%? This is 2012 numbers. Frankly, I didn't know what the number in 2013 was. Do they know that the top bracket is 35%? And so, Madam President, members, I doubt that everybody in this chamber knows all the federal tax brackets, knows how they impact Minnesota taxpayers. And so to exclude that from this report when we don't even know what the impact is of federal taxation, and not have that to look at the big picture for how it impacts anybody in Minnesota paying taxes, I think is unwise.
Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. And having not served on a tax committee, I would appreciate it if Senator Skoy would yield.
Senator Skoy, will you yield? Yes, he does. Senator Benson, make sure that you address, however, your remarks to the President.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Skoy, I'm reading the statute as written, and it talks about property taxes and sales taxes. Now, as far as I know, there's only one property tax that this body has governance over. So does this include property tax? Does the tax incident study include property taxes passed by counties, cities, and other local units of government?
Senator Skoy, your response to the question.
Thank you, Madam President. And to the answer to that question is, yes, property taxes are included in there. And part of that is because there are a number of programs that the state does that impact property taxes, such as PTR, such as agent credits to local governments, and the eliminated market value homestead credit had a major impact on property taxes across the state. So, yes, they are included in here.
Okay.
Senator Benson.
Madam President, if Senator Skoy would continue to yield, does the same hold true for local sales taxes?
Senator Skoy, response to that question.
Madam President, I would expect that it does. It is a local tax that Minnesotans pay.
Senator Benson.
And thank you, Madam President. And so those two things over which we don't have a large degree of control are included. Does the tax incident study as drafted incorporate the impact of our lack of federal conformity on federal issues? Senator Scoia would yield.
Senator Scoia, do you yield to that further question? He does. Senator Scoia.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Benson, while I'm searching my recollection about conformity, because we had a pretty good discussion about whether that should be added to the tax incident study in committee. And at this time, I'm not able to recall exactly what the Deputy Commissioner said with regard to that in the current tax incident study, but we can get that information to you as soon as possible.
Senator Benson.
Okay, thank you, Madam President. It was just really to the point that while we do not have control over federal income taxes, the study does include a large number of taxes over which we have little or no influence. And to the conformity, we have a good deal of influence over whether Minnesotans are paying more because of lack of federal conformity. And so I would support the Ortman Amendment that we should take a complete look at the impact of the decisions of this body and those bodies that also impact Minnesotans as part of our tax incident study.
Is there further discussion of the Ortman Amendment to the amendment? Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll. Senate is reminded that we're under call. Members will please vote. We're under call. Senator Bach?
Madam President, I would move that those not voting be excused from voting.
On that motion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. There being 28, Secretary will close the roll. There being 28 ayes and 36 nays, the motion does not prevail, and the amendment to the amendment is not adopted. We are now on the A5 amendment. Senator Lemmer.
Thank you, Madam President. In listening to the recent conversation, I think there's been a little more information given regarding the discussion of the SCOI amendment. However, there was a ruling by the President regarding a germaneness issue, and I would like to appeal the ruling of the President at this time, ask for a roll call vote.
Senator Scoy, Senator Lemmer, you're too late. We've moved beyond that point that you can do that appeal.
Madam Chair.
There's been an intervening action taken
by the body.
Point of inquiry,
Madam Chair. The rule that allows a challenge to the President's decision, I believe, is in Rule 14.4. Right. There's no reference to a time factor in that rule, Madam President. And I was wondering if you could point out to me where the time factor would be in the Minnesota Senate rules.
Senator Lemmer, it's in Mason's, and we will cite that to you presently. Senator Lemmer, I cite Section 230.2 on page 165 of Mason's. An appeal from a decision of the presiding officer must be made promptly. It is too late to appeal after debate or other business has intervened. Is there further discussion on the A5 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We now have House file as amended before the body. Is there further discussion? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. The tax conformity is important, and we should pass tax conformity, and we should pass along the tax cuts from our federal government to Minnesotans without any further delay or gamesmanship. But let's talk about what's in this bill. And then let's talk about what's not in this bill. We've got federal conformity for the educator expenses, for providers of mass transit subsidies, for qualified conservation property, motorsports racing track facilities, accelerated depreciation for business property on Indian reservations. But let's just say that when we work on a tax conformity bill, we're making some choices. And there are some very important choices that the leaders in the Minnesota Senate have made on behalf of Minnesotans. And I frankly disagree completely with the decisions that have been made in the construction of this bill. Why have we not been worried about the Minnesota families? Why are we not going to extend the tax cuts from the federal government that they want Minnesota families, the working families, and the married couples to have? Members, we passed the elimination of the marriage penalty, and the governor vetoed it. It's now time to extend that tax cut to Minnesotans. And it's also time to extend the tax cut for the earned income credit, the working family, the folks at the lower end of the income tax brackets. And so, members, I would like to offer the A9 amendment that will do that, and then we'll talk about how many Minnesotans would be impacted and provided tax cuts from the federal government if we could make this amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Ortman moved to amend House File Number 6 as follows, page 2 after line 26, insert, and this is the A9 amendment.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. The governor has talked about tax fairness. And frankly, I don't believe most Minnesotans believe, nor should the governor believe, that it's fair for Minnesotans who are married to pay more in taxes just because they happen to be married. And if we extend the federal tax cuts to Minnesotans, we could erase that tax unfairness. If you want to talk about tax fairness, let's adopt this change. It would affect 562,700 Minnesota tax filers. 562,000, that's half a million taxpayers. They should get this tax cut. Why are we not extending this tax cut? It would be $111 per return, and it would cost the general fund $62.4 million. And let's also address the fact that the federal government wants to give a tax cut to those on the lower end of the income scale, the earned income credit. That would affect 50,500 returns for a cost of $15.6 million and would put $308 back in Minnesotans, hardworking families, in their pockets. This is real relief that they need right now. And there's no reason not to provide these tax cuts to Minnesotans, especially when the federal government has intended and passed laws to give these tax cuts to our fellow Minnesotans. Members, I can't imagine why we wouldn't make this a very high priority. I'm passing out for you a map that shows how many other states have already adopted this change and extended the federal tax cuts to their residents. There are 27 of them. Minnesotans deserve this tax cut. We need it for our economy. They need it for their families. They need it to pay their bills, and we should not be standing in the way. Members, I ask for a roll call vote on the A9 amendment, and I hope you'll vote for families and hardworking Minnesotans and give them the federal tax cuts that our federal government has granted to them.
There will be a roll call. Senator Skoy.
No, thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Ortman yield?
Will Senator Ortman yield? Wait, just a moment. Senator Ortman will yield.
Senator Ortman, if you could inform me of where you are paying for the cost of this conformity provision.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President, and to Senator Skoy's question. The exact same way that the Senate DFL is paying for theirs. They have a tax conformity bill with $18.1 million in it, plus the $15,000 I hope we're going to get back from the Department of Revenue. $18.1 million that's going to come out of the reserve. And so it's not important for the DFL it has been important for the DFL to pay for tax conformity for $18 million. I agree. Let's pay for tax conformity. Let's get these Minnesotans these tax cuts. I pay for it the exact same way as in the underlying bill.
Senator Skoy.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Senator Ortman, this provision has, depending upon the exact years that you're using, I think it's around a $63 million cost. And those would be dollars that would be going to pay back the school shift if we leave them where they are. And so we'll see how you all feel about that. But I would urge us to not continue to go into that. Now, I know that we are using some of these dollars. We've picked some of the smaller ones and the ones that are most problematic for Minnesotans, and I appreciate your effort, Senator Ortman, but I would ask for a no vote.
Is there further discussion? Senator Cohen.
Madam President, now, Senator Ortman, as I understand it, as you've suggested, and Senator Scoia has indicated, you're taking the money from the school shift repayment. All right, Madam President, may I ask Senator Ortman to yield then?
Will Senator Ortman yield? She yields. Senator Cohen, your question of Senator Ortman.
So, Madam President, Senator Ortman, I'm trying to pick up from the amendment how you pay for this.
Senator Ortman, your response to the question.
Thank you, Madam President. To Senator Cohen, the language or lack of language would mirror exactly what was in the underlying bill, meaning it's silent. And we had testimony from our fiscal analyst this morning in the tax committee. When it is silent, that means that it will be drawn before the school shift is repaid, just as in the underlying bill and the $18 million cost for the tax conformity in House File 6 that came over that was just amended. Very same.
Senator Cohen?
So, Madam President, Senator Ortman, my thinking, although not complete, was along those same lines, that you've taken a much larger amount and removed it from the school shift repayment. You've done so in a way that doesn't explicitly do that, so it's clever in that regard. But it still begs the question as to how long we continue to budget in this way. There's no question that if you look over the fiscal problems of the state over the last decade or so, that when the DFL had the majority, as has been the case over not just the last 11 years, but we had other financial problems. We've looked at things like a school shift. But where we compounded it 2 years ago to such an extent that it had not been done to that extent previously, where we had an immense school shift, we're making the effort, Governor Dayton's making the effort this year, to make sure that we repay monies in a structurally balanced way, that we don't continue to use shifts, reserves, cash flow accounts, and so on. And in fact, I think he has sent a letter out indicating his objection to utilization of the reserve. Understand that you're not doing that in this instance. But it begs the question as to whether or not we're going to see other amendments on the floor from either yourself, Senator Ortman, or other people in the minority caucus that utilize reserves, shifts, and whatever. And it just perpetuates the budgetary problems we have from now into the future.
Senator Ortman.
Well, Madam President, I think that's kind of funny. The governor proposed his budget, and he proposed not to pay back the shift. And the Senate leadership here has proposed a tax conformity bill that doesn't pay back the shift. I've learned from our fiscal analyst that if there are reserves and there's still a continuing bottom line, that money will be used first to pay for the tax conformity, whether it's the $18 million or the $18 million plus the $63 million that would be included in this amendment. And the fact is, and most people know, that since our November forecast, our revenues are up. They're up by $114 million, I believe, in the last two months. So there's sufficient funds to pay here. There are no gimmicks. I have no different approach to the issue than the governor or Senate leadership or even the House leadership. We're all paying for things the same way around here. And I sure hope that that argument isn't going to get in the way of helping working Minnesota families get the federal tax relief they deserve.
Is there a further discussion of the A9 amendment?
Madam President.
Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam President, Senator Ortman, let me give you the bad news. Yes, revenues are up, but what we're going to find when the next forecast comes out is the revenues that are up are one-time revenues. And what we're going to find out, based upon the discussion of the Council of Economic Advisors, Commissioner Stinson, and the department, is that those monies were from taxpayers who put payments in early. And what's going to happen is we'll see revenues up for this biennium, but they're being taken out of the next biennium. And we're going to have a larger deficit with the March forecast. obviously not sure how large that deficit will be, but it's going to be a larger deficit. So as we take away money from whatever source, it just makes things that much difficult, much more difficult, and that much harder to take care of.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to make a comment. We had a debate here just a few minutes ago about the Medicaid expansion, and as I recall, I believe adopting that was going to save the state about $60+ million. I think that would be enough to cover the conformity that Senator Ortman's bill would talk about. It seems to me that we're kind of at a balance here. Now, as I said in my comments, I think that Medicaid thing is a gimmick, but since we've already adopted that, it seems to me we have the money to pay for this if that's the question.
Is there further discussion on the Ortman Amendment? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. To Senator Cohen's argument, I anticipated that as well. He says that's one-time money, $114 million. Well, this amendment was prepared for a one-time elimination of the marriage penalty and the working family credit for just 2012. And members, our families need this help.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll. The Senate is under call. All members will vote.
Madam President, I move those not voting be excused from voting.
On that motion, all those in favor, please say aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Secretary will close the roll. There being 27 ayes and 37 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on House File 6? Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Skoy yield?
Senator Skoy, do you yield? He does. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. I have some questions related to the IRRB board section. In particular, I served on that committee the last 2 years, and there were three citizen representatives on that board that gave us invaluable information. I mean, particularly I'm thinking about Jack Ryan, his breadth of knowledge on finances, on banking, on what makes a business work, were incredibly valuable to that committee. And so as I read this new language, it appears to be intentionally excluding all citizens from having a voice on this board. And I'm just wondering why we are doing that.
Senator Skoy, response to Senator Gazelka's question.
Thank you, Madam President and Senator Gazelka. You know, I too had the opportunity to serve on this board. I served with Mr. Ryan, and I concur with you that he was a good board member. I think that being that I'm no longer serving on the board and not as knowledgeable as other members in the body, that if I could yield to Senator Tomasoni to answer your question. Maybe you'd want to talk about the TAC committee.
Senator Tomasoni or Senator Gazelka, is that agreeable? Senator Tomasoni, can you have a response to, or will you have a response to Senator Gazelka's question?
Thank you, Madam President, and I really appreciate it when Senator Scully says he's not as knowledgeable as me. Couldn't resist that one, sorry. Madam President, Senator Gazelka, the citizens that were on the board were good citizens. They were good participants. For the most part, what we're trying to do here is to make sure that the makeup of the board is within the taconite tax relief area, and that the selections are automatic based on the people that are representing the area. And so what this new setup does is it provides for the automatic selection of the board members based on where they live and who they represent. And it would be virtually impossible to make that determination with citizens and who the citizens would be. And so what ends up always happening whenever we come back into session after an election is that the board has to be reappointed. And oftentimes the reappointing is a tedious process based on who is in control of what and who is making the appointments and who the members are. And so oftentimes we don't get a board appointed until the end of March or the end of April. And we are in that particular agency, we are also in a budget session, which we need a board in order to approve a budget. And so not having a board during all those months and not being able to meet can oftentimes be detrimental to the agency. So this particular setup shows a way of knowing who the board will be immediately after the election, and it automatically appoints the members. In addition, we have something called the Technical Advisory Committee at the IRRRB, which is made up completely of citizens, and in fact, I don't even know who they are. And they meet with the commissioner and the staff at the IRRRB and review all of the projects before they even get to the board level. And so there's ample citizen input put at the IRRRB, and many of the projects that don't get past the Technical Advisory Committee never come to the board anyway. And so I think there's more than enough citizens that are involved.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam President. And I appreciate the response from Senator Tomasoni, but to exclude citizens when for a number of years they have worked very, very well on that board, to me is drowning out the voice of the people. And I wish that wasn't in this bill. I don't have a good way to take it out of there, or if there's a better way to improve the board, if there's things that needed to be fixed, I would have wanted to have taken more time than to put it in this conformity bill.
Is there further discussion? Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. Would Senator Tomasoni yield with regards to the same question, same area?
Senator Tomasoni, will you yield to a question from Senator Ingebrigtsen? He does. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Tomasoni, I certainly don't have the experience that you have serving both in the House and the Senate, but I have been here now for 6 years, and I was a very integral part, as I believe the majority Senate at that time was controlled by DFL when we put together the Citizens Committee for Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Committee, which is incidentally obviously named after Bob Lasard, still alive, and my predecessor, Dallas Sams. And putting together those Citizens Committee was, I think, quite encouraging for the state of Minnesota, who had, in fact, voted for the legacy amendment. And where I'm going with this is, if we're going to start here now with the IRRRB not having citizen members on there, my fear is, and maybe I can ask you because you're chairing the committee, I know that oversees the legacy as well as, and I forgot to mention, the Clean Water Council, which has also got citizens involved. Can you assure me that if this is going to happen to the IRRRB, that's the only place it's going to happen? Can you assure me that we're not going to be going after all the citizens? Now, I bring that forward because I know that at one time the LCCMR was The membership of the LCCMR was all legislators at one time, and then they went to some citizens now, and it seems to be working fine. I've always been of the mindset that if those citizens' committees go away, I'm not going to be the one that wants to stand in front of the camera of all Minnesotans and say, you know what, we legislators are much smarter than the citizens, the ones that have been dealing with these particular areas that are so experienced, and you know they are. We don't want them to participate in the process anymore. I guess my long question is, and goodness, I'm getting kind of good at long questions, I fear that. Is this going to be where it stops, or are we going to be looking forward to that with the other councils moving forward in this session?
Senator Tomassoni, response to the question.
Well, Madam President and Senator Ingebrigtsen, the short answer is no. The question was, is it going to stop here? Is that what you said? Okay, so the short answer is yes, it's going to stop here. But there is a difference, and the difference is that the citizens, while I don't necessarily agree that they should be able to vote on appropriations like they do, the difference is that both on the LCCMR Clean Water and the legacy and the Lessard Sam's legacy amendments is that after those have been approved by those citizens, after those appropriations have been approved by those citizens, they do come back to the legislature for final approval. And at the IRRRB, that isn't what happens. Once the commissioner approves the board actions and the governor signs off on it, it becomes an appropriation. And so I think it's very appropriate that only legislators who are accountable to the public because they get elected every so often are the ones that make the decide where the tax money should be going, and that is a major difference between the IRRRB board setup and the other boards.
Is there further discussion on House File 6? Is there further discussion on House File 6? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to offer the A51 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Ortman moves to amend House File Number 6 as follows. Page 2, after line 26, insert. This is the A51 amendment.
Senator Ortman on the amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. Our federal government, including our President Obama, also gave tax relief to Minnesotans in the form of the repeal of the limit on itemized deductions and the repeal of the phase-out of personal exemptions. And Minnesotans would be affected by that. 112,800 returns on the itemized deductions would have a $395 savings per return. And the phase-out of the personal exemptions would affect 63,900 returns and provide Minnesotans tax cuts in the amount of $476 per return. And members, I believe Minnesotans would like this tax cut, and I believe that we should vote for it. The total cost is about $73 million, again, clearly within the $114 million that we've seen in terms of the increase in the revenues over the last couple of months. It's funded the exact same way that the underlying bill is funded. And I hope that this chamber will vote to extend those tax cuts to the constituents that elected them. Madam President, I ask for a roll call. Sorry.
There will be a roll call. Further discussion on the A51. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Ortman, while it's clearly within the confines of the funding, if you're willing to use these dollars in that mechanism, it just doesn't seem like it's a good way to go. We finally get our reserves built up and are making progress on paying our schools back, and here we're going on this structural balance problem of spending these dollars when we don't really know if we're going to have them into the future. Let's support what the governor's trying to do and bring four-year structural balance to our budget, and let's work through this session to make sure that that happens, and let's reject these one-time funding initiatives today.
Further discussion of the A51. Seeing none, the secretary will call the roll. Members are reminded we're under call. Please vote. Senator Bach.
I move those not voting be excused from voting.
On that motion. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Secretary will close the roll. There being 27 ayes and 37 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Is there further discussion on House File Number 6? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I just wanted to confirm the difference between what we saw in the Tax Committee, the version that we voted on or considered in the Tax Committee, and the amendment that now is basically the core of this bill. And I hope that Senator Skoy will correct me if I'm wrong, but the Angel Tax Credit Program is not in this bill, nor is the Historic Structure Credit, the Soil Deficiency TIF, all those policy provisions that the governor vetoed before have not been included in this bill. The Rochester local option sales tax, the Cook or ambulance services, Dakota County, the St. Cloud TIF. I just want to be really clear with folks that those provisions are not included in this bill. And Madam President, if Senator Skoy would confirm that for our members, I think that would help clear up any confusion they may have about what is in the bill.
I'm assuming that's asking Senator Skoy to yield. Senator Skoy yields. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Order, yes, as you know, I have worked hard this session to bring those provisions forward. You know, I supported many of them last year. I support them right now, but I just can't make any headway with the House on these provisions. And rather than delaying the tax conformity that we all recognize is so important, potentially 6 to 8 more days, over the weekend when there's going to be Minnesotans filing taxes, I decided to not continue forward with those. But members, I'm going to tell you, you're going to see those provisions again this year because that's an amendment in the Tax Committee, and I'm planning on acting on many of those provisions as we close out this session. So it's not for a lack of support on those provisions, because I do support them. We amended them into the bill. We thought it would be a good thing to do. We didn't think they were controversial. Very small cost. But in the end, in order to get tax conformity for Minnesotans as soon as possible, we left them aside today.
Is there further discussion on House File 6? Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. I think that this bill highlights so many differences between Republicans and Democrats. This bill is about tax fairness, making sure that Minnesotans get the tax cuts that our federal government wants us to have. But we've selectively chosen, the Democrats have selectively chosen who gets that tax cut and who doesn't. There are hundreds of thousands of Minnesota taxpayers and families that have earned these tax cuts, and they're not in this bill. Hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans. They're left out. Where are their tax cuts from the federal government? They're not here. And we do have the resources to pay for these tax cuts. And our Minnesota families and taxpayers, they deserve these tax cuts. Hundreds of dollars for each of these families. And maybe some in this chamber think that that's not very significant to give Minnesota families $476 per return or $308 per return, but I know many families in the state of Minnesota that really need that money to help pay for college, to help repair the roof, to buy new tires for their used car. Minnesotans need this. They deserve it. They expect it from their federal government. The federal government voted to give us tax relief that is being denied. Why is it being denied? Look at the map again. In 27 other states in the country, those residents get this federal tax cut, and we don't. Governor Dayton, if you want to talk about tax fairness, let's talk about this. I hope members will all vote yes for tax cuts, the minimum number that are here, because nobody should stand in the way of tax cuts for Minnesotans, but we can all stand very disappointed that we didn't include all the tax relief that Minnesotans deserve.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President, and members, and Senator Ortman. You know, I think that these are some good provisions, but I would question they weren't included in last year's bill. And the other thing that I want members to know, that this is a spending increase. I mean, tax credits are spending. And I think that we should bring some fiscal discipline and restore our structural balance and not make the spending of our state's resources our top priority. So I ask you to pass the conformity bill because it's important provisions in here for the timing of Minnesotans as they fill out their tax returns. But to expand it, I think that we've done a good job today in maintaining this bill in its present form, and I hope we're able to pass it over to the House, and they will concur with the work that we've done, and Minnesotans can fill out their tax returns this weekend just once.
Further discussion. Senator Ortman, a final comment, please.
Madam President, this is relief for 1 year, 2012 tax liability. We do have the resources to pay for this. We didn't in the past, but we do now. And these refunds and tax credits should not be denied Minnesotans. Spending should not be the priority of the Minnesota Senate. The people we serve and the people who fund government and the people that work hard to support all that happens here should be our higher priority.
The Secretary will give House File Number 6 its third reading.
House File Number 6, a bill for an act relating to taxation, conforming certain income, franchise, and property tax refund provisions for tax year 2012, etc.
Third reading. Secretary will take the roll on House File 6. Senate is under call. Please vote. All members have voted. The Secretary will close the roll. There being 66 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Thirteenth order of business, announcements of Senate interest. Are there any announcements? Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session.
Madam President.
For what purpose does the gentleman rise?
An announcement of Senate interest. Before you excuse members.
Senator Latz.
Members of the Judiciary Committee will still meet today. We will meet immediately following session.
Madam President.
Senator Marty.
In honor of Valentine's Day, the Energy and Environment Committee will not meet tonight or today.
Spend the time with your Valentine. Any other announcements of Senate interest while you're thinking? Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Stump from 11:30 to 12:30 p.m., Westrum from 12:20 to 12:35, Pappas from 12:40 to 1:50, Rosen from 12:40 until 1:50, the end of session, Jensen from 1:05 to 1:15, Sharon from 1:35 to 1:45. Any other announcements? Senator Torres-Ray.
Excuse me, Madam Chair. The Education Policy Committee will meet right after session.
Any other announcements? Senator Reinert.
Just a reminder to some of us that the Legislative Audit Commission is meeting at 2:15 in room 123. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Senator Bach.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do now adjourn until Monday, February 18th, 11 a.m. on President's Day.
All those in favor of that motion say aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.